Welcome to the International Double Reed Society podcast. These podcasts feature interviews, sound clips, and other items of interest for members of the IDRS. This is your host, Terry Yule, and I'm pleased to have you come join us. Now, let's enjoy the musicians, the music, and the wonderful art of double reeds. Okay, this is Terry Yule, and delighted to welcome you to another IDRS podcast. I'm here with Lorelei Dowling, who is just a phenomenal player of contemporary music for bassoon. And I think you could be very interested in her wonderful story. And so I'm going to start out with, could you just tell us a little bit about the start of your career, maybe your training, a little bit in Australia, and how you managed to make it all the way to Europe?
Sure. Thank you, Terry. Thanks for that introduction. As you can hear by my accent, I'm an Australian. And I started out in an orchestra. I started out in the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, and I was there for 3 years. And the orchestra gave me a scholarship to go overseas and play in the 1992 IDRS conference in Frankfurt. And I was playing with the Queens of the Night, which is now a defunct all-female bassoon quartet. And while I was there, a friend of mine, an oboe player who is no longer in Ensemble Modern but was in Ensemble Modern then, invited me to a rehearsal with Stockhausen conducting his woodwind quintet Zeitmass. And while I was sitting there, I suddenly realised that was the next thing I really wanted to do in my life. That was the next career step or the next innovative thing that I could do on bassoon. And while I was at the IDRS conference, I resigned from my job. And which was very brave because I wouldn't recommend it now to take that risk. And within a space of 2 years, I was lucky enough to be offered a job in Vienna in their full-time ensemble called Klang von Wien. And I've been there since, and that was in 1994. Mm. So it was a very interesting transition into new music. And I enjoy new music because it's like it's making nothing into something, and it's finding solutions to, it's almost like mathematical problems. And new music, in a sense, exists because composers and audiences want new sounds. And so I guess that's why there's these groups around the world. There's my group in Austria, which is full-time and consists of 24 players. There's Ensemble Modern in Frankfurt, which is also full-time and it consists of 17 players. There's Intercontemporane, which I think also consists of 17 players. And I think they may have, as well as playing, half-teaching posts. And, of course, there's London Sinfonietta Music Fabrique in Cologne. And in America, could I say Lincoln Center? I don't know what your equivalent is. Even though you don't have, in America, full-time groups, you have many contemporary groups. And that's how I ended up in the field of new music. And basically, since being in the group since 1994, I've noticed the development of bassoon writing has absolutely rocketed and is on par now with what a bass clarinet can do, all these amazing techniques, which makes it hard because then you've got the next generation behind you and how do you train them, and that becomes very hard.
Mm. I'm quite interested to know if you have any collaborations with composers. Obviously, if you have a composer who's a bassoonist, they can write well for the instrument, but how do you as a performer work with maybe the non-bassoonist, helping them to write the kind of music and expression you'd like to have?
That's an interesting question, Terry, because lately the faddies, I'll say, composers will ring you up and they'll say, we actually don't know much about the bassoon, which is great because otherwise they were writing things that, you know, you could play on the piano very quickly, you went on the strings, and just before these cases they've been commissioned those, and you have a session with them and show them the different things that one can do on the bassoon. There's a good story about that, is that somebody, Ligeti, I don't know who he asked, I think I know but I won't say, asked somebody, how high can you play? And that person said, just, you know, by the by, probably put on an amazing bow call with a hole in it and a reed that's so hard you can't get anything else, and whacked out a top G and said, see, a top G. And then suddenly we see the Ligeti violin concerto with this top G, and everybody's struggling with it. It's so you have to put a cap on it a bit, and I really put a cap on it. I don't say, oh yes, I go to a top G, top A flat, because then you just, it's not a bassoon anymore. Then you're compromising, and composers do go a bit over the top. And the other thing is, they're very composers at the moment, and mainly because I'm based in Vienna, we see, of course, commissioning a lot of Teutonic composers, so we get to work with those composers, as opposed to, say, if we commissioned an English or an American, you wouldn't get to work with them. They'd send in their compositions, so you wouldn't know if they knew how to compose for different instruments or not. They're very interested in what the contrabassoon can do, because that's a new colour that hasn't really been explored. And there's a lot of techniques, different, I'll say contemporary techniques, to be used on a contrabassoon. But at the moment I switched over to a contraforte because I wanted to play faster and higher, but I do have to put a cap on that because they've decided, composers have read that this contraforte with the double octave on the vocal can go to a top F. And you have to be careful because after composers work with these smaller groups, they often get commissions with orchestras, and you don't want them writing like that.
I was quite interested in hearing you play, and you know, knowing that you have to work with the nuance of these double tones, with the harmonics and things like that. I'm wondering if you found any ways to specially practice that, or how did you master sort of that nuance of color and the with the double tones, there's a frequency that happens with them.
That's a very interesting question. That took a while. I mean, I think with these new techniques, and when I say new techniques, quarter tones, multiphonics, glissando, even slap tonguing has a way to it as well. You need to practice those things in context with a solo piece or an ensemble piece where you've been booked to play in a contemporary ensemble. But the way I decided to practice, particularly quarter tones, was that I decided I wanted to find true quarter tones in my instrument that blended with the notes around it. Because if you think of string players playing quarter tones, the colour is the same. It's an equal colour, only because they're using a finger and a string and moving up slowly. So they have these blending colours, which as double reed players particularly we don't, and it sticks out and it sounds a bit raucous. And actually my colleagues used to tell me, can't you find another fingering for that quarter tone? It doesn't fit in. And what's becoming obvious to me too is that composers are writing quarter tone chords where you need to tune them, and you really, the listener hears them, and then they resolve it to a normal chord, which is actually good, and listeners and audiences often sort of sit up a bit startled, and they really hear it. So if you can play pure quarter tones and not just out of tune notes, it makes more sense. So I practiced it. One day I decided to sit down and go through the old Panazzi book. I mean, that's sort of, you need a reference book, and work out what fingerings suited my instrument and how it blended in. And it took some time. And like I say, I'd recommend it only if you were working on a piece or a solo piece or something with quarter tones in it, because on top of that, as bassoonists, we always have reeds that we have to work on, and technique, meaning scales and breathing and studies and orchestral things. We have many other things as well. And I also believe that as a bassoonist, it's good to try and do both orchestral playing and contemporary playing.
In a moment, you'll be hearing a performance of a portion of a piece written by Pierluigi Bilonis. Manda is the fourth movement from a cycle of five solo pieces for bassoon called Legno Edra. The entire work lasts 78 minutes. Not one true bassoon note is heard in the entire work, only colors via the use of bisbic glandos, tone beating, multiphonics, and flageolets. Movements 4 and 5 are dedicated to Lorelei Dowling. Manda had its world premiere in Graz in 2006 in the Minoritan Church. Pierluigi Bellone is currently the professor of composition at the Graz University in Austria. He's won numerous prizes, including the Claudio Abbado Vienna International Composition Prize and the Ernst Krenek Prize. He's written numerous works for bassoon, including a double concerto for two bassoons and 8 studies for bassoon. And I thank Lorelei Dowling for these program notes.
That brings up, when you're mentioning scales and everything, do you have a regular routine of practicing quarter tone scales or anything like that? Or do you or do you only just practice those as it's required in the passages?
Actually, I practice only as required. And then I have to sometimes change my quarter tone fingerings because of what vocal I might be using or what reed. Mm. That comes into it. I used to practice scales all the time. So constantly my routine would be just scales, and then I guess I felt proficient in that and I stopped and then started working on more contemporary techniques, and so I do practice them. I also worked out it really helped my hearing what my instrument was doing, the notes that were out of tune on my instrument, by focusing on tuning quarter tones. It was amazing what that came about, how that helped me, yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about the music scene in Europe and how easy or difficult it is for somebody to emigrate to Europe, as you have done, and to establish a career there?
The music scene is quite vibrant in Europe. I think now, being 2007, I think it's very difficult. But, I mean, I'd still recommend it. One has one's dreams and you still follow those dreams. And there's always a door that opens. Maybe in the 90s it was a little easier. At the moment, there are a big turnover of jobs in any sense. There was a bassoon job in Ensemble Modern. They auditioned it. Also orchestrally, many jobs. But it is difficult, and there's more and more players of bassoon and oboe. And, of course, it's probably like in America. It's, you know, a huge pool of players and not enough jobs to go around. And then also in Europe, they, like many other countries, everyone's xenophobic, so that comes into it. I would say right place, right time. I was lucky. Also, I'd been working on and off with Ensemble Modern for 2 years, and thanks to the bassoon player there, they opened the door for me in Vienna, and I was very grateful for that, because in Vienna they were looking for a bassoon player. And yeah, it's very difficult, but it's a big scene there, contemporary scene, probably as big as here. I don't know what it's like here. Yeah.
Do you have any humorous story you can share with us?
I was trying to think of a humorous story. Only one, which I think is quite good. When I was studying bassoon in Geneva, and I studied with Kim Walker and Roger Bernstingle, we used to have reed-making lessons with Kim. And one day we had all these reeds we were making, and three of us decided we'd play a trick on Kim of trying different reeds, and we'd scrape some down and said, "Here, Kim, try this." She said, "Oh, yeah, that's great. Here, Kim, try this, that's great." And then one of us, it was my Swiss friend, took the reed and she cut a diamond in the back of the reed, right in the middle, so you couldn't see it. She cut out the shape of a diamond.
A hole
there. Yeah, it's a hole there. And we went, "Here, Kim, try this." And Kim put it on. She said, "Oh, it's a bit strange. It won't blow very well." And we were just bursting out laughing. And she gave it back to us and said, "Oh, scrape it a bit more. It's not really working." And then we said, "Here, Kim, it's got a hole in the back of it."
You must certainly have inspirational teachers or bassoonists in your life or people. Could you just talk about, you know, perhaps who's been your inspiration?
I have to say my inspiration was Kim Walker. When I first went to her, she was not as known as she is now, and she was fantastic. And she had a lot of younger students than me that weren't developed, and I was sort of the first one off the block, and that was inspiring. And Geneva, I lived in Geneva for about a year and a half there studying, and Geneva was inspiring, and it was a rather golden time, but we all have those golden times of student years, but to me that was great. And I decided to study with Kim when I'd gone on a holiday, just by the by, for 2 months. Australians, they love to travel, and I had decided to take time off playing the bassoon, and I was in my early 20s, or I was 20, and so I went on a trip, and while I was in Paris, I was in Fnac, and I saw this LP they had in those days. They don't have those now, but that's not so long ago, LP of this goofy young woman on the front of the cover, standing with a bassoon case in the snow. And I thought, who's this goofy girl that plays bassoon? And I decided to buy the record. And at that stage, to send them back to Australia, you had to send it by ship, because I don't know why, but I had to send some records back by ship. So they warped. So when I finally picked up my records from the shipping company in Sydney, they were warped. And it was 3 months later, and I thought, oh, what a shame, but I'll put them on the stereo. And I listened to it and I just thought, I want to play like that. That's the most amazing sound I've ever heard. I was just enraptured. And then through a series of events, I actually managed to track her down and then go and study with her. And that was terribly inspiring. Yeah.
Laurel, I thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Terry. That was lovely.
Views expressed by the guest or host do not represent those of the International Double Reed Society. Be sure to listen each month to a new IDRS podcast. For further information, please visit the IDRS website at idrs.org. This is your host, Terry Ewell, thanking you for listening. Goodbye.